Welcome to the latest episode of Inspiring Futures. My guest today is Gerard Critchlow. Gerard heads up strategy. Is it cultural strategy on Axe? Is it global cultural strategy or your global strategy?
It's a funny title, but it's global strategy and it's a focus on culture.
Global strategy and a focus on culture on Unilever's Axe/Lynx brand. You've been doing that for 3 years. So, Gerard,
yes.
Welcome to the podcast. Great to have you on. I know we've been trying to do this for a while, actually.
Yeah, it's really good to be here. I'm a big fan of your podcast, so good to finally chat, you know. I'm looking after Lynx and Axe and doing that from a global standpoint and work with lots of different partners at IPG to help bring together to life how you make this brand live in culture for a Gen Z audience. That was a lot.
That was really good. There's a lot of really interesting experience points, you know, just like different places, again, where like come at this marketing world, communication world sort of differently. So you've got this really nice perspective from PR all the way through to sort of RGA Digital. Now you're on the brand side. So you're going to pick up a really good portfolio of experience across all those different elements, which is so useful. Because we're in a world where people are so often sort of siloed, you know. Yeah. You're an advertising strategist, you know, so you don't really know about social media, you know, or you've done a lot of tech and you don't know about advertising. So do you find that the breadth of your experience is really beneficial and giving you sort of now in your position, because you have sort of more of a broader role, that's really been helpful?
It's interesting because like at some level it's your superpower, but just getting started, it's almost like not just because when I looked at it, I never had formal training. So I kind of just like made it up. Right. And so like, I never knew how things were done and what frameworks were. Just as like, this is what the audience cares about. So I kind of always leaned on what do the audience care about and how do we bring that to life in the most interesting way? And then how do you collaborate with people who can get that? So the creatives as an idea or production, or can we bring in other partners who kind of have that same vision? Because that's really what's important. So that's kind of like where I lean in, and then we can bring in the most credible people to play with.
So you talked about, I thought you said the sort of like the AMV, kind of the iconic British David Abbott, iconic British advertising, you know, was really about long-term campaigns. The Economist, for example, you know, very powerful writing, almost pushed itself into culture, you know, became culturally iconic. And now you're like 40 something years later. What do you think's changed for brands? How do you sum up the change from being sort of like the push from brands and agencies into culture versus this kind of new, well, it's not new, but transformation. Yeah. It's a transformation, right? Of the way in which brands are built. So how do you describe that?
I think about this quite a lot. And I think it's like, it's a question of like, what business are we actually in? And a lot, it's advertising, but really we're in the intention game. And for me, if we're in the attention game, who does attention best? And that tends to be entertainment companies. And so I've always tried to look at how do we shift from interrupting people to really providing entertaining content. So the way we looked at when we looked at brands traditionally, in a sense, but from the Economist days, is we had a captive audience where you had less channels. And so you had more chances to interrupt or inspire them with great copy or with brilliant videos and that type of thing. And I think less and less, like there is no more monoculture, especially for younger people. So you have to be able to entertain in order to get people's attention. So everything that I think we need to do is based on kind of that, ask people what they want to hear and tell them that. So listening to the signals, we have so many more channels at our disposal, at our fingertips, that we should be able to use that in order to supercharge that attention game.
What are some of the watch outs when you sort of take that approach? It seems quite, I think to me, there seem like a couple of watch outs that are pretty fundamental to getting it right. Firstly, are you on brand or are you just reacting? If you're constantly reacting, I think there's a danger that you go off brand on quite a regular basis. Maybe that does or doesn't matter. And then the other part is, does the brand really fit?
Yeah.
So you may be going after these audiences and you may be entertaining, but sometimes the brand doesn't quite belong. And I think the two things are completely related to each other.
Yeah, I think you're right. I kind of start from the premise that no one gives a shit about your brand. So I almost like take the brand hat off. Of course, we're doing it for brands. And so we then first look at what is the landscape? What are the signals? What are those conversations or topics? And then we then put our brand hat back on and then look at, are any of these topics related to the brand's point of view or their purpose or like what their strap line is? And if it is, how are we going to sort of provide value in it? So currently what I'm doing with Axe is we have this sort of theory, or the way we work, it's called not always on, which is very much around disrupting people's feeds and brand first content and shifting it to be always there. And so where do people talk? Where are the conversations happening and what's going on? And so we try to fan like a fan, and we have great partners with the Martin Agency in a way who are brilliant at executing this. But if you fan like a fan, you almost take your brand hat off and you speak like the fan. You're interested in what they're talking about. You like the same songs, the same tracks, you know, the backstories, all of those things. And then you can then begin to bring value to the audience by then say, as a brand, we're going to step into this in a more sort of authentic way. And I think that's the way you can bring brands in. But really, if we have to be humble about the role that brands play in people's lives, because they don't have enough attention, but also they're not looking out for us.
Yeah, let me go back to the origins. You know, I always find it interesting that the soap opera is called a soap opera for a reason, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it seems, in a way, we're not like that far removed from it. I mean, the mighty Procter & Gamble decided that it would create an entertainment division and produce entertainment to ultimately sell soap.
Yeah, I mean,
if these shows weren't entertaining, they would never have gotten anywhere.
Yeah, we're coming back to it, right? We got the soap opera, we got F1, we got Barbie, we got Ted Lasso. It's becoming much more relevant now. And so like, there's so many examples where we're like, ah, shit, yeah, entertaining. We need to do that, but then we also can sell. And so you kind of get like this triple bottom line, win-win-win, right? So you entertain the audience, the brand gets to sell, and then you begin to sort of provide long-term entertainment and value for a customer that differentiates you. And I think that's really, really an interesting way, and it's just going to get even better, right? And we're seeing entertainment, LVMH, you just had Jay on, but I think we're going to see that with sports and so many other places like Crystal Palace. I'm an Arsenal fan, so it pains me to say this, but Crystal Palace is doing a great job with their sort of uniforms and what they're doing in terms of partnerships, and I think we're going to see much more sports teams become more related to fashion and entertainment with their superstar athletes. And that's where things are going to go. So we have to be aware of these things.
Yep. Barcelona are apparently thinking of dropping Nike as their kit supplier.
I saw that. And that would be huge, right? They're going to do it in-house, and that would be really interesting. So I'm definitely watching that space for sure.
Yeah. So then how does it, let's talk about, we can see the purity of going after fans, but then there's the reality of the brand business. So you've got this sort of this world going on, and your brand actually has to sort of fit into this world.
Yep.
And so it seems to me that like it's quite fundamental to a constantly be understanding this world where your brand fits, because you still. Even though you're a brand, you still want to be part of that world. So understanding how that works is kind of key. And then making sure that the team understands this and there's like a common language amongst everyone who's working on it. So you sort of have a playbook. But
yeah,
how do you think about those elements?
And I think playbooks are interesting, but they're kind of also like static documents, and the world that we're living in is very much alive and changing quite constantly.
How do you deal with that?
So as a team, we use WhatsApp quite a lot. And so every single day, we have team members from the Martin Agency and other agencies that we work with in different regions of the globe, constantly looking at feeds. And they meet every single day to say, hey, what's going on? Is this interesting? Is this interesting for the brand? And is there value for us? They will send that to us as a agency partner client team. We vet it, see if that's interesting. We kind of also look at sizes of conversations and engagement to see over time if there's any trends. And if we believe that that's something, we jump on it. But I think part of it is and I see this now with clients, is fear is a big deal. They don't want to do things to mess up. Also, the implications of saying something wrong goes high. You have legal involved. There's lots of different people that are involved. And so at some level, you kind of have to post. It's like a muscle. You post a lot. Some things will fly, some things won't. But the things that do fly do really, really well. And from what we see is we keep a small team, meet every single day, post, get that muscle going. And then when things fly and we think the engagement and the conversation is scaling, we begin to provide value. And so we've seen that over the course of what we're doing with Axe, not only in America, but in Europe and LATAM and other places. And it has so much more implications, not just social. It actually is trickling itself from the ground in the social conversations into bigger pieces of work, like the above the line work. So what are the sort of types of conversations that people are talking about? What influencers or musicians do they relate to? Those are partnerships we then go after. What do they want? Because Axe is a fragrance brand, what do they want from fragrances? How do they want to how do they react to each other? And those are stories that we either tell and power up, or we then use that as fodder for like our product innovation. And so when we think about the next iteration of our products, what's not just on the can, but what's in it, that says everything about what our audience is doing. And so it's really taking our ear and putting it to the signals on the ground and empowering that from the bottom all the way through the line.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So like you're talking about like listening from the ground up and that having implications on what ads get created potentially and what products get made.
Yep, exactly. And we have a roadmap, but then of course as a brand, but then the thing that tends to miss is really that audience insight. And it's like, that's where we then supercharge that with everything that we've been seeing, because we've seen it, the trends, and we see the players as well.
So how do you get from the sort of observational side, monitoring, listening side, to the conversational side? So how do you you see stuff's going on, do you have to flip to the insights group who like, let's go dive deeper on this and get some people together and talk?
No, because I think that kind of will slow us down. And so okay, by people doing it every single day, it that muscle builds up. And I think having a really good community manager, social manager, who's not sort of just a little bit junior, but is from that world. So for instance, if we're in the music, hip hop, sports world, yep, we try to hire people who have been in those worlds. And we've got a great community manager in TMA who does a great job of that. And so it's almost like when I worked at RJ, we worked at Nike, and at some level we didn't have a lot of briefs because our clients were our audience, and they knew exactly what people wanted and the taste because they were on the ground. And this is kind of the same thing. Of course, we have briefs when it comes to bigger sort of above the line things, but on these, you don't necessarily need everyday briefs because you're in it all the time. And so the client understands, the teams understand, and we kind of hone our taste. And these are sort of the muscle to understand what taste is good. But we also have data and analytics that we look at. And so we don't look at the size of the demographic. We look at the size of the conversation and the trend over time. And so things start to speak to spike, you kind of see it. And that's really what makes a node for us to say, yeah, we got to follow and pull this thread.
So all this stuff is like, what I think is fascinating is it's sort of like super real time. You know, you've got a small, nimble team. You've got people who are ingrained in the culture. And so you're almost, and you're sort of, you know what it takes me back to? Back when I was in London a long, long time ago, talking to record companies.
Mm-hmm.
They used to have these kids that would go to clubs. You know, like I remember going into a Sony or something and talking to these guys. And I said, yeah, we've got like 17-year-old kids that you, if you saw them, you'd walk the other side of the street, you know. You know, they're dangerous. They're up all night. Who knows what they're doing? But they're kind of like informers. They sort of go out to the clubs and they bring back the stuff, you know, and we have conversations. It's almost like that has become sort of now digital, since lives are digital, we're doing the same sort of thing, but digitally.
Yeah, exactly. But we don't want to lose those kids and those, that real sort of tangible, like on the bleeding edge of culture, because we really need that. And so we try to do that as well. But we also do this and we kind of supplement the two. And I think the more points of reference that we do have, like the stronger our point of view becomes to say, yeah, yeah, this is what people are interested in. And it's not perfect. You know, like my favorite ad of all time that got me into advertising was like Nike Freestyle. Do you remember that one? And I was looking up the other day, it's 17 years old. Yeah. So I'm a spring chicken anymore, right? Like to me, that was like really interesting. So I don't pretend to know all of it, but I do have like a honed nose by doing it all the time that like what is better than others that we should go for.
Yeah. I mean, you also know, you also can sense people who have those skills too. So
yeah,
you know, that's cool. So you've got all this stuff going on, but then you've got this. So I don't know. I don't know if you've got any theories or any like, I'm sure you have, because you've done the Sparks and Honey, but wasn't there a sort of Stuart Brand, I think, back in the day, or someone did these sort of timelines of culture, and they talk about like fashion moving like really, really fast, and then they talk about like other things like moving really slowly. So you've got these different time horizons.
I don't know. Yeah.
It reminds you of anything of like how trends move. We got fads, we got trends, we got macro trends, we got micro trends, all these things like move at like different, have a different pace to them.
We used to look at it as fast and slow culture.
Yeah.
And I kind of think of myself as kind of like a cultural stockbroker in a way. And what you're looking at is of a series of signals in fast culture, which is like, let's say, tweets or things on Instagram or what's happening on TikTok hashtags. I'm looking at all of those things. And then you are marking them down, like what are the trends things, and looking for patterns. And if you have enough of a pattern, you begin to see bigger topics sort of gravitating. And that is what slow culture is. So slow culture would be like the shift in masculinity that we're seeing from sort of egocentric guy masculine to much more sort of soft boy culture, in a sense. Or like you're looking at gore core, and why is the sort of big fat dad shoes becoming a big thing when people are walking in nature, but why is it permeating in, you know, high-end culture on the runways? Why are Crocs a big deal? And so there's sort of the underlying sort of reasons behind that. But I think in order to understand those bigger, slow culture trends, you really have to do the miles and the hard yards of understanding the fast culture trends. And so I think
they're
like
all connected to each other.
They're all connected. What we used to do in Sparks and Honey, we would have walls.
Yeah.
And then we would print all of these trends out and look at them as wall on the wall. And every sort of signal had sort of a periodic table like element. And you'd put sort of this trend belongs to this element. And we would just have a huge thing. And actually, when you start to print things out, I know we live in a digital age, but yeah, when you start to see things, you see the patterns much, much larger.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So look, take a brand like Axe, you know, going back to our model where, to me, Axe was called Lynx, and it was a BBH account, and BBH would do these very spectacular So as the guy sprays himself and gets the girls, not girl, girls, I think it was like,
yeah.
Yeah. That was the kind of model. And that as a brand, if you stick in the past, you just lose relevance, right? So this brand has had to evolve, right, to keep up with the times and keep up with this changing audience.
Yeah, I think, when in those days when BBH had it, and they, like, we give them kudos because they really understood the cultural norms and what was happening. And so they're kind of like, we're playing to those norms. But when culture moved on, when views of young guys and masculinity moved on, at some level, the brand needed to change, and we didn't necessarily take wind of some of those changes. And I think how we started to look at how we're going to shift that brand into a more modern era was doing some of the things that we would just look at social signals. We looked at lots of different trends within our guys. We commissioned big research around attraction, because we look at the brand as having three pillars: is fragrance, humor, and attraction. And in order to really understand the brands, we need to find the Venn diagram. What is the sweet spot between all those? And that is a process that took us a while. We kind of sort of had some hunches. We were kind of there, but it wasn't quite right. And we had some brilliant partners to help us bring that to life. And everything that we've seen, from social to digital to talking to real guys and anthropological work, we hired a company called Nonfiction, which is great because we want the traditional way. They're great.
Yeah.
And they really helped us really solidify some of our thinking. And that helped us then in turn understand what is our point of view, how are we going to shift to a modern perspective for young people, and then how do we then take those cues to sort of bring that to life on an ongoing basis. And that's basically where we stand today. And I think what we've seen is we try to link what we're doing in social, bringing some of those bigger activations together, and create something that we think is really interesting, where it's about talkability. And so if we can get people talking about us more at some level, like around, I think it was a Forrester's stat said that brands who get talked about more grow faster. And so at some level, that will help us grow. So everything we're trying to do, aside from selling more things, is to get top of mind to young people. And the best way to do that is to continue looking at these fast and slow culture trends and making sure we're ahead of the game there.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I remember before Martin got hired to be the agency for Axe Links, it was well documented. Was this when you joined? It was a long process of research. And one of the things that Unilever did, and one of the things I thought was really fantastic, was that they actually went out and found the creative teams who'd worked on the brand in the past and interviewed them. I thought that was just so smart.
Yeah.
You know, that was part of that big project, right?
So I think that happened just before I joined.
Just before you joined, yeah.
But the great thing about me living in London is everyone kind of knows each other in a way. Yeah. It's a small world. And I actually was a partner with one of the creative directors that worked there at the time. So we definitely got to pick her brain, which is Rosie Arnold. And she's a legend. She is a legend. And we were partners at AMV when she moved over. So she came and she did a whole download of the brand, et cetera, to us. So we kind of really understood the foundations and what built the brand there. But then we also knew what levers we might have had to change if we were going to make the brand relevant to sort of a more modern audience. It was definitely a recalibration stance for us, because we don't want to lose the magic, but then you also want to, supercharge it.
Yeah. No, it's interesting because I worked on Unilever a long time ago. And I remember being in a meeting with very, very senior people, a very senior person, I think it was. I don't know why I was in this meeting. I can't even remember. But it was me.
It's like the story of my life. Like, what am I doing with this meeting?
The head of a division of Unilever and probably one of the most senior people in the agency. and I'm there, and the client, the Unilever client, sort of, I guess the agency is trying to like tell a story of what we're doing and how we're up to date. And the client throws just a curveball, which was, I don't really care about how many offices you have. I just care about the work. And all I can tell you is that our most successful advertising is for Calvin Klein, and we did it in-house.
Oh, wow.
And it was just a moment where I thought, well, wow, this kind of like some axis is, you know, the world is spinning on now in a different axis, you know. And, I did quite a bit of work on Unilever, and it was always, I look back on it very fondly. I mean, I always thought they were the most fantastic clients. They were sort of more intellectually rigorous than many others. They really wanted to understand people. They were prepared to experiment, to do really, I mean, the types of, I worked on this incredible project where we didn't even have a product. You know, so it was in sort of sustainable, it was in the sustainable space. And we went on a learning journey, and we went to Germany and talked to anthropologists, we talked to fragrance makers. I mean, it was a real, you know, it was really fascinating. It was an amazing experience. And they were prepared to go through the rigor and had to do that. And I really appreciate that. But at the same time, the flip side is it's a giant corporation, you know, and there's, you know, so you have to, you know, there's this, I can see, like, I say to someone today, you know, well, a couple of decades ago when I worked at Unilever, we spent a year learning about a market, and they were like, what? How could you do that?
Yeah. I mean, this process that we've spent like at least 9 months trying to like sort certain like projects, and it goes back and forth through certain stakeholders, and they have opinions, and you really have to play the game. And I'd say, like, I've learned just from being exposed to these clients that it's really hard being a client, because you have lots, you have your domain and the culture of the company, but then you have the cult of the brand, and then you have the even deeper subcult of like your own team. And so you're kind of navigating between this nexus of the three areas, which can be very complicated in a sense. And so I think we're lucky that our clients are brilliant at that, but also really want to push the edges. And so they give us the room to do that. And it's our job to bring forward the best people and the resources from the network to make that happen. And so I think it's an always evolving tension between the cult, the culture, and the subcult, you know?
Yeah. Of course, one of the interesting things is that, and maybe I always thought that the Dollar Shave Club is an interesting acquisition. It never really kind of worked. And just thought, I mean, this guy made an ad and he made $1 billion of making a single ad, basically.
Yeah, but then you take that mindset, those processes, how he's done it, you put that into a bigger machine, and they tend to want everyone to kind of follow the same path, right? And I think sometimes that doesn't work, and you kind of have to be able to understand, when do we need to depart from that and allow things to go? And that is such a challenge. And I think big companies are learning that, but also they bought them for a reason. They wanted to learn from them. And I think like that should go two ways, and sometimes it doesn't. That's kind of an interesting learning as well.
So we talked earlier about this. We're talking about this sort of transformation of marketing and of brands. When you look out in the world, who do you think are the, who do you see as the brands who really get it, you know, who understand the dynamic has shifted and changed and responding accordingly?
That's a good one. I don't want to give you like the typical ones. Oscars were last night. So A24, do you know them?
The production movie guys.
I think they're much more than just like a production house. Like what they've been doing to me is pointing the way for the future of how brands and companies should exist. And so while they do make those films, they make sort of these indie cult films. And so they've got this like crazy audience of people who just love these weird films. But they use social media in really interesting ways. They use like memes in order to promote the film. And those memes then become merch that you, people can buy. They also auction, after the film is done, they auction off props from the films to people who love them. They have a subscription newsletter that people can subscribe to. So they've kind of like, you can buy like $5 a month or so. And then it's called AA24, where you can have a membership program that they give you sort of like tidbits of what's going on and things like that. They've got just lots going on. And so I think like that's really interesting because they are behaving not like a typical production house, but they're kind of like a social media company, they're merch, they're influencers, they're doing just a lot there, and they're still small, right? And I think they've got that infusion of capital from like private equity, and they are going for it. And I think you start to see the hits come all the time.
Yeah, it's a really fascinating example because, you know, mainly because this is a space where that hasn't traditionally happened, right? So the studio or the record company, I mean, obviously there are some crazy exceptions out there of, you know, studios and record companies that have managed to stand for something and stand behind something, but traditionally it's not really the case. These guys are really breaking the mold. And I think it goes back to sort of like some of the principles that you were talking about. I think if you start thinking about it as an audience, which they should do, because that's what they do, you know, building a relationship with an audience, what they're sort of changing is saying that we have this incredible emotional connection with our audience, and it's based on a 2.5 hour a movie and everything leading up to it and everything that happens just after it. But that's sort of just a one-off event. What if we could have a more enduring relationship based on these amazing moments? And it just seems really, really smart. I think a lot of people, it's sort of in a way like ad agencies and their positioning, they're just terrible at it.
The reason
they're terrible at it is because they don't want to be forced into focusing on anything. Because, you know, I don't want to be critical, but Droger wants the Facebook business and the New York Times business, which is always found incredibly bizarre how, you know, one company that's trying to kill the other is actually, you know, they're getting paid by both. So, you know, I think if you can focus, and I think that's going to be the challenge for A24 as they move forward and they have investors, is like, okay, what is the center of this brand? You know, I think that's a big problem for brands right now.
Yeah.
Is it's about mass reach, and the mass reach has just gotten insane. So anyone that doesn't like Vice would have been a wonderful partner for Axe Links, probably was in its time, probably got in the brand into a very specific audience, but it doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
And so now the sort of walls are coming down, and we don't have the curators.
Yeah, I think that's an important
point. It's almost like the audiences are self-organizing, right? Previously they used to organize under curators. And maybe like these things can sort of exist, and maybe that's just what's happening. The evolution, I guess we're talking about evolution, you know, evolution of an ecosystem.
Yeah, you're right. That curated point is really interesting, because like we used to have the curators used to be like big reporters, big magazines, big ones there, right? Like the Face magazine was
exactly.
Like,
for example.
Already,
Or even journalists who wrote for The Face or the new NME. Yeah. You know, they.
But then
why
would you write for The Face when you can do a Substack? Or why would you work for the New York Times when you have your own blog, right? What if you're Mr. Beast? Like, you've created your own sort of universe and people follow you, et cetera. So like this idea of having one authority and like a single curating authority doesn't work anymore because there's so fragmented, to your point around reach. So like for me, it's like really, really interesting if, what if we could reach lots more people by having, looking at it of a longer term instead of these short bursts of energy and create these relationships where they can get involved at any point that they want, not necessarily like a single funnel journey. It's very much a cyclical thing.
Yeah. But I mean, I think if you look at what's interesting, you know, obviously Mr. Beast doesn't just become Mr. Beast. I mean, people think he's just arrived, but the guy's been doing this for a decade.
Yeah.
Right. And he's basically been A/B testing his way to million-dollar productions.
Yeah, completely. I was just like doing a little project for my own, it's like fun and games. And I was looking at what are the brands that tend to kind of show up today that like have the most like cultural renaissance, and you'd be like, New Balance came up. Wow, they're everywhere. Or like Crocs or even CeraVe. And if you look back in the history, it's like a 10-year journey that they've started on, and they've laid the groundwork. And then all of a sudden, when it's paid off, it becomes this cultural spark. But that journey from 10 years is becoming shorter and shorter now. And so what I've seen is gone from 10 years to 7 years. And partly it's because they're taking cues from those people like Mr. Beast or those YouTubers and others. But they're also looking at it not like an advertising strategy, but it's very much like on the ground influencers, and they're picking their battles. I think brands today have to understand who their real enemies are. A lot of them look at their category, but it's not necessarily brands in your category, for instance. It's probably like entertainment companies and the feed and all the things that disrupt us from following our attention because we can't even get in front of them to show them in another way.
Yeah, that's really interesting. So let's flip back to what keeps you motivated and engaged, and what can young people who are in this space, younger people, and you're young, but people are younger.
I'm youngish.
People are younger than you. You know, some of you are 26. Like, what are some rules to live by? Because I know I've had some conversations with some young folks in social media, and there's a lot of disillusionment and cynicism. Someone I did a really good interview with who's very much. Very smart person who she sort of said, the way she was describing it was sort of like there's this stigma attached to social media that it's you're the college kid, yeah. But now you're the 40-year-old college kid, and you're at the front line of if stuff's going to hit the fan, you're going to be the person who has to deal with it. So you have this very incredible level of responsibility, but the hierarchy sort of don't get it. You know, it's still the domain of this sort of, yeah, I don't understand it. We'll get an intern or a college kid to come and manage it. And now it's become it seems like the world has moved on, but sort of perceptions and attitudes around the discipline have not moved on. I don't know if you agree.
I think it depends. It depends on the culture and the cult, right? So I think that used to be true. Yeah. But then you have companies like Duolingo or, you know, like Taco Bell, where social media is really becoming sort of the secret weapon to breaking through. I mean, I used to ask myself, like, what CMOs are out there or chief brand officers that really cut their teeth in social media? How many are there? I couldn't find very many, to be honest. I'm still like trying to what is that template and how do you then they do it? But I'd say part of it is we talked about the silos is people on the client side have so many big issues that they're dealing with that they don't understand, or they don't have the resources to like engage with people across the different fields. And so it's a bit on both of us to understand, how do you speak the language of numbers? And I think what we're interested in social is engagement. Whereas what they're looking for is like revenue and profit, right? And so how are you helping that? And
how do you connect the two?
Well, I think part of it, and it's not a perfect way, is to understand how do we bring that talkability to connecting it to purchase intent,
yeah,
or to limited editions or merch. Like, so how do we turn social media or advertising from sort of a cost almost into a revenue generator in itself? And I think that's where we start to change the model. So if we say, if you invest in doing this bottom social media stuff right now, it can trickle up into your bigger things and actually look at it as an investment rather than a cost center. And I think that's also a massive mind shift that we're working with currently within Axe and Unilever. And there are some big changes that are happening, and these timescales will take a little while, but almost you start to see we're working on projects for like the next 10 years based on what we're seeing now. And that's kind of how we have those conversations.
So obviously, we'd be a mess if we didn't talk about artificial intelligence.
Yeah, it's everywhere. You can't get away from it.
Don't get away from it. Is it? I'm sure it's part of your world.
It is. It's starting to be much more. I think we are definitely playing with. I mean, I love that Scott Galloway article of like corporate Ozempic. I think he like really. Nailed it, right? And so it's a bit of like an efficiency game. But I think of it as like a tool that we actually, the better prompts that you can create, the better outputs you can get. You have to spend time doing it, and it's a muscle that we have to like hone. And so our teams are, we've got really good teams, and depending on the region of the world that they're in, their sort of comfort level with AI is different. And that actually is really helpful for us, right? So we work within India, Latin America, the UK. So we get to see a broad range of how that's coming to fore. And so I think it's really exciting for us. And so we shouldn't be afraid of it. We only should be afraid of it if we don't intend to use it, because it's here. So why not use the tool sets that we have to do a better job of what we want to do?
Yeah, I was talking to somebody the other day. And I'll be publishing. It'll be interesting because you'll be interested in this person. Can't reveal right now. But another UK marketer, and we were talking about the power of data crunching. Mm-hmm. So if you think about how much data you guys are crunching, and from a listening perspective, and then maybe this has to do with your vendors, your partners. As much as it is to do with you, but in terms of being able to sort of analyze and collapse. And it always surprised me when I looked at social listening, and you'd decide to subscribe to some tool, we'd have somebody in our department who would do it, and you'd go like, where's the analysis? And it's like, I'm working on it. It's on an Excel spreadsheet.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was like, there was this sort of, again, it was another perception reality thing. It was like, the perception is you press a button and it tells you what's going on. The reality was, no, there's somebody who's working for 17 hours building a spreadsheet to work out what the analysis is. And I'm sure that's where AI is just going to make a massive difference in being able to, you know.
I say yes and no, because
okay,
if everyone has the same AI tools,
yep,
then everyone has, it's a baseline. So like the real magic in that analysis comes from the interpretation.
Yeah, absolutely. I think they're just getting to the analysis.
Hmm.
I mean, the fact I can go into ChatGPT and upload a 60-page PhD thesis, and within a minute, it can spit out, hopefully it's accurate, because I'm really touching wood here. But hopefully it's accurate. It can give me the 20 main themes that are in this thesis. And it could alternatively be 700 pages of qualitative verbatims.
Yeah. I mean, it's a great tool for I like people work at home a lot. I work at home a lot. So I don't necessarily have partners to bounce things off of. But like if you go to ChatGPT, you can bounce things off of it. And I think it's really good at just like getting the crap out of the way, right? Just the baseline to say, like, get these out of here because these aren't interesting. Yeah. These three are interesting. And that's where I want to take this to another place. And that's where that taste level, that experience, that of a human then really makes a difference. And so we might be able to hire people just for their taste and their experience. And that's where agencies or creative companies can make a difference, I'd say.
So just going back to rules to live by, you know, how to succeed in this space, and what do you think the important factors are in somebody is 26, 27, what should they be watching out for? How should they be living their lives and working to be successful?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think when you're 26, 27, and you're in those rooms, like you were talking about with the CEOs and things, you might think you don't have a voice, but actually your voice is probably the biggest in the room. And you don't realize your own power. I'd say like, I come from the school of thought that like, people use agencies and brands because they fundamentally have lost contact with their audience. They don't understand them. They don't know how to reach them. They don't know what they're about. That's why you need agencies. And so the person on the front line of that tends to be the younger people who are listening and doing their groundwork. And so actually you have more power than you think. And don't be afraid to do the hard yards to talk about what you're seeing from a consumer standpoint. And then humbly, I'd say also, really don't think it's just about the brand. Really think about like how we talk about culture a lot, but like what are the things that are top of mind for you? And so keep a folder or a drawer or a file on your computer where you track those things and look at that pattern and trend over time, and you begin to create a story.
Things that are inspiring you, they could be like, they could have been like long-term enduring things. They could be just things you've just discovered. If you had a reading list, what sort of stuff would be in there?
Inspiring right now. Well, I do like these little social experiments, right? So like for me, getting out of the house and really I just go and I'm starting this just to go by myself to other places that I've never been before. So I'll pick a new place that I've never been and I'll just turn up and see what happens. And honestly, like the world surprises you. You get to chat to more people, go to places that you've not been, you discover new things and then sort of things percolate. So I've been picking places around London, for instance, or like it's easy since we live in London to travel to other cities. And I'm discovering new things that, I haven't seen before, tasted new foods, but new ideas. And that to me is really interesting. So that's also something I'd say, if you can, as a 26-year-old, try to like switch up the gears. What's interesting as well is a book that I've been reading. It's called Do Interesting by, what's his name? Russell Brand.
Davies.
Simple book, super interesting, but like just, again, this like muscle that you have to like practice how to do things. And I think it's a good reminder of practicing to find or spot interesting things. And when we talk about ChatGPT, it's almost the same thing. There's a lot in there to give you, but if you know what to look for in a sense, because you've honed that muscle, it's much easier and you'll get much more out of it. So I'm really like interested in that stuff.
Cool. Thank you so much.
Yeah, always good.
It was a great conversation. I really appreciate you taking the time.